Module 2, Development of 4R Skills. Part 2, Listening Comprehension. Section A, Directions. In this section, you will hear 8 short conversations and 2 long conversations. At the end of each conversation, 1 or more questions will be asked about what was said. Both the conversations and questions will be spoken only once. After each question, there will be a pause. During the pause, you must read the 4 choices marked A, B, C, and D, and decide which is the best answer. Then mark the corresponding letter with a single line through the center.
1. We have a complete range of famous brands here. How about this one? It's Longines.
I'm afraid that I'm not interested in watches with metal watch bands.
Question. Which is the right statement according to the conversation? 2. What did you think of Tokyo?
Thrilling, but not very attractive. All the buildings are grey and ugly, and it's very crowded, of course.
Question. What does the man think of Tokyo? 3. Mark is playing computer games all the time.
Oh, should he do that when the final exam is drawing near?
Question. What does the man advise Mark to do? 4. Hello, is that Bill? I'm stuck in a traffic jam. I'm afraid I can't make it before 8 o'clock.
Never mind. I will be here waiting for you.
Question. What do we learn from the conversation? 5. You really seem to enjoy your literature class, do you?
Yes, you are right. It has opened a new world for me. I'm exposed to the thoughts of some of the world's best writers. I've never read so much in my life.
Question. What does the man mean? 6. Peter seems to think that this year's basketball season will be disappointing.
This is his opinion. Most others totally think differently.
Question. What does the man mean? 7. Is this the check-in counter for flight 1852 to Hangzhou?
Yes, but I'm sorry, the flight is delayed because of a minor mechanical problem. Please wait for further notice.
Question. What do we learn about the conversation? 8. Jack, would you join me for dinner tonight?
You paid last weekend. Now it's my turn. Shall we try Thai restaurant?
Question. What do we know from the conversation?
Conversation 1.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure. What is it?
Do you believe in God?
Yes, I do. But I don't go to church anymore.
Why not?
I was raised Catholic, but around the time I got confirmed, I realized that I didn't believe there was a hell or the pulpit could make decisions for Catholics.
So what religion do you follow now?
I guess I'm not really religious anymore because I don't follow one particular faith, but I am spiritual. I believe a life after death. How about you?
I don't believe in God. I think that once we die, that's the end.
Why don't you believe in God?
I was raised a Jewish, but I never really understood. I didn't see the point of going to a synagogue and praying to God in a language that I did not understand.
Did you study Hebrew then?
Yes, everyone in my family speaks Hebrew. It's part of who we are.
So, would you call yourself an atheist?
Yes, but not in front of my parents. They would never forgive me for that.
I think fewer people of our age are as religiously devout as our parents are.
I agree. I just tend to agree with scientific explanation rather than theological ones. I need proof in order to understand things.
Questions 9 to 11 are based on the conversation you have just heard.
9. What does the man think about the pulpit?
10. What does the man follow?
11. What does the woman say about Hebrew?
Conversation 2.
Hi, what are you watching?
It's a program about Islam. It's very interesting.
Wow, so many people. Where are they, and what are they doing?
They are Muslims on a pilgrimage to Mecca. Muslims call this pilgrimage Hajj.
Why do they go there?
Muslims believe that every man who is able should go on a Hajj at least once in his life. Mecca is the spiritual center of the Muslim faith.
When Muslims pray, they face towards Mecca.
That's right. Unfortunately, so many people go on the Hajj each year that there are often stampedes and people get killed.
I heard about that. The pilgrims must walk around a large sacred black stone.
That's right. That's when accidents often happen. The Saudi government tries to limit the number of pilgrims to reduce the chances of accidents.
Pilgrimages are common in many faiths.
Yes. In England, Christian pilgrims might go to Canterbury, and many Christians go to the Vatican on pilgrimages.
Isn't there a place in France where people go to get healed?
I think that place is Lourdes. There are many stories of people being healed after visiting there.
Do you think that there is something magical about that place?
Personally, I think that people believe they will be healed and that faith causes a change in their mind that cures them. I don't think any place is magical in any way.
Questions 12 to 15 are based on the conversation you have just heard.
12. What are the two speakers talking about?
13. Why do many stampedes often happen in Mecca?
14. How does the Saudi government try to do to reduce the chances of accidents?
15. Why do people go to get healed in France?
Section B. Directions. In this section, you will hear three short passages. At the end of each passage, you will hear some questions. Both the passages and questions will be spoken only once. After you hear a question, you must choose the best answer from the four choices marked A, B, C, and D. Then mark the corresponding letter with a single line through the center.
Passage 1. Media and popular culture might portray religion and science as being at odds, but new research from Rice University suggests just the opposite. Findings from the recently completed study, Religious Understandings of Science, RUS, reveal that, despite many misconceptions regarding the intersection of science and religion, nearly 70% of evangelical Christians do not view the two as being in conflict with each other. The research was presented by Rice sociologist Elaine Howard Eklund today in Washington, D.C. Eklund, the principal investigator and researcher for the RUS project, is the Autry Professor of Sociology and director of Rice's Religion and Public Life program. He noted that evangelicals are of interest in this study because they constitute approximately 26% of the population in the U.S. and are often considered the most hostile toward science. There are also other key findings. Nearly 48% evangelicals view science and religion as complementary to the other. 21% view them as entirely independent of the other. Overall, 38% of Americans view religion and science as complementary, and 35% of Americans view science and religion as entirely independent. Eklund plans to write a book about the survey findings with Chris Sheetal, a sociology professor at the West Virginia University. She hopes the research will shed light on how religious groups understand science and vice versa, in addition to providing outreach and translation to individuals who might have difficulties with some aspects of science.
Questions 16 to 19 are based on the passage you have just heard.
16. What does the new research suggest?
17. Why are evangelicals interested in this study according to Eklund?
18. How many Americans view religion and science as complementary?
19. What do we learn about Chris Schietel? Passage 2. The Thanksgiving holiday celebrated each November in the United States is known worldwide as an American custom, and Thanksgiving and gratitude have marked important milestones in American life for hundreds of years. The Pilgrims, who sailed to this country aboard the Mayflower, were originally members of the English Separatist Church. They had earlier fled their home in England and sailed to Holland to escape religious persecution. There they enjoyed more religious tolerance, but they eventually became disenchanted with the Dutch way of life, thinking it ungodly. Seeking a better life, the Separatists negotiated with a London stock company to finance a pilgrimage to America. Most of those making the trip aboard the Mayflower were non-Separatists, but were hired to protect the company's interests. Only about one-third of the original colonists were Separatists. The Pilgrims set ground at Plymouth Rock on December 11, 1620. Their first winter was devastating. At the beginning of the following fall, they had lost 46 of the original 102 who sailed on the Mayflower. But the harvest of 1621 was a bountiful one, and the remaining colonists decided to celebrate with a feast, including 91 Indians who had helped the Pilgrims survive their first year. The Pilgrims did have a feast in 1621 near Plymouth, Massachusetts, after their first harvest. This is the feast people often refer to as the First Thanksgiving. This feast was never repeated, so it can't be called the start of a tradition, nor did the colonists or Pilgrims call it a Thanksgiving feast. In fact, to these devoutly religious people, a day of Thanksgiving was a day of prayer and fasting. Nevertheless, the 1621 feast has become a model for the Thanksgiving celebration in the United States.
Questions 20 to 22 are based on the passage you have just heard.
20. What marked important milestones in American life?
21. Why did the Pilgrims sail to the United States?
22. What happened to the Pilgrims when they sailed on the Mayflower?
Passage 3. The Pew Research Center, a nonpartisan social science research organization, recently released a report on religious hostilities. According to the study, in 2012, members of religious groups were harassed in 166 countries, more than in any of the previous 5 years. Globally, the overall level of restrictions on religion has reached a 6-year high. Now, over 5.3 billion people, or 76% of the world's population, live in places with high or very high restrictions on religion, up from 68% in 2007. Two of the 7 major religious groups monitored by the study, Muslims and Jews, experienced a 6-year high in the number of countries in which they were harassed by governments or civil society. The study was released in advance of National Religious Freedom Day, celebrated in the U.S. on January the 16th. In a proclamation honoring this occasion, President Barack Obama said, "America proudly stands with people of every nation who seek to think, believe, and practice their faiths as they choose. The U.S. will remain committed to promoting religious freedom, both at home and across the globe. We urge every country to recognize religious freedom as both a universal right and a key to a stable, prosperous, and peaceful future." U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Samantha Power, commented on the Pew Research Center report and said the United States is proud to lead the fight against all forms of religious intolerance, wherever they exist. "Protecting freedom of religion," she stated, "is a cornerstone of American foreign policy, carried out by prioritizing accountability for religiously motivated violence, urging governments to adopt legal protections for religious minorities, and promoting societal respect for religious diversity."
Questions 23 to 25 are based on the passage you have just heard.
23. What is the pew center according to the passage?
24. When was the report released?
25. Which of the following is not included according to Samantha Power's speech? Section C. Directions. In this section, you will hear a passage three times. When the passage is read for the first time, you should listen carefully for its general idea. When the passage is read for the second time, you are required to fill in the blanks with the exact words you have just heard. Finally, when the passage is read for the third time, you should check what you have written.
A couple of weeks ago, I was sitting in a bar, quietly sipping my favorite Belgian beer, and quite sacrilegiously, I offered up a bit of a prayer for the divine intervention that made it taste so good. I know it's wrong, but it got me thinking about all the amazing ways that monks, nuns, all sorts of religious groups have affected the history of our food. Not just the beers, but some of the world's most magnificent cheeses, liqueurs, stuff that's been responsible for a lot of very earthly pleasure. In the medieval landscape, religious institutions had a huge influence at seats of learning as advocates for good animal husbandry. As most monasteries had herb gardens, they also wrote down, as so recorded, many of the medicinal advantages of herbs. The days of huge monasteries commanding an area may be over, but as we'll hear, there are still lively, innovative, and profitable businesses in Britain and abroad, with the sisters and brothers making the most of online sales to reach new customers. The history of religious institutions is so long in this country, and the first institutions were founded somewhere in the 6th century. So inevitably, because monastic institutions were huge landowners, even as the great landowners had an influence on our cuisine and on the way which the country developed, so too did those monastic institutions. So you really, in some ways, can't untangle the history of food from the history of religious institutions.